This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest things that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong or missing none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living in and far away, those born and to be born. May all beings be happy. Let none deceive another or despise anything in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading outwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay, let's begin. So, we've come here again. It's lovely to see everybody.
Thank you.
We've come here tonight to, you know, meditate. And it's good to see a lot of people interested in this practice or this exercise, you could say. Or, you know, some of the monks like to call it, it's not a science, but it's an art. The art of stillness. Like the art of just being able to sit down and just close your eyes, and I like to call it like having time out from the world. Yeah?
Yeah,
time out. And just to have a break. And it's nice. And an example is when we're living in a monastery, it's a very busy place at the moment. You know, it's basically a full house. Has anybody been up there? I'm sure more people should go up there. You're missing out. Well, anyways, it's very busy. There's about 30 monks for this rains retreat. And a rains retreat is the time of the year where monks take 3 months off. So you don't see us for 3 months. Please don't get sad. We'll come back. And then, so for 3 months we cut down on our teachings and our travelings and things like that, and we focus in on the meditation practice and the study of the, you know, the teachings and things like that. And so this year we have 30 monks, and then on top of that there's like men who are training to become monks, so we have about 4 of them. And then we have I think about 2 or 3 men staying there to develop their meditation. And also we have three women staying there as well. So it's a full house and it gets quite busy. And sometimes, you know, even though it's a monastery, we still have our dramas. and sometimes we get caught up in it. And I guess it's just like your life as well. You have everyday dramas as well, but maybe not in that context. No. But you might have dramas at home between husband and wife. Dramas with your friends. Or even at work, you know, there's somebody that you might not get along with, and they might say something that may annoy you, and then you just basically get caught up in it. But the nice thing about living in a monastery, you get to have some time out, and that's the beautiful thing about it. You may be together for like a few hours a day, but then the rest of the day you get to spend on your own. And it's actually a skill that one develops over time, is to be able to just let go of the things that has happened, you know, moments ago. Like, you know, in a monastery, sometimes you get together for the meal, you talk to one another, and then after that you head back to your hut. So you don't carry that with you back to your hut. And the example that meditators like to use is like, you know, in life we carry a backpack on our backs, and we put stuff in it, and it weighs us down. And you can compare that with, you know, the stuff that you put in your mind. I don't know what you guys put in your mind, but things that you have to worry about, bills that you have to pay, and you carry that around, and it becomes heavy. It makes you tired, it makes you grumpy. But, you know, as people who wanted to develop a more peaceful mind, we have to learn how to let that go. It's, you know, just to put it away for a few moments. And tonight, that's what I would like to encourage in you, is to try to forget about things. Yeah? Have an empty mind. Have a mind with nothing in it. You know, it's just so wonderful, and it's so beautiful to be able to just sit down quietly for like 20 minutes and with having just so little disturbance in the mind. And you start to feel that, you know, a quiet mind is a peaceful mind. You know, a quiet mind is a happy mind. A quiet mind is a place that you know, you want to spend time with. And it brings you a lot of you know, joy, a lot of inner happiness. And it's something which you know, we don't really get taught in this world. You know, when a problem comes up, we get taught to think about it, to analyze it, to try to figure it out. And that, in a sense, just adds more you could say drama to whatever's going on in your mind. And the Buddhist way is, you know, looking at it from a radical standpoint of trying to let things go, trying to forget about things. And, you know, that's one thing that I've learned over the years being a monk. Sometimes I can get quite busy. I am known as the work master. So we get these fancy titles in the monastery. So I tell people what to do. Basically, in the mornings, oh, you got to chop wood, oh, you got to drive the monks here, oh, you got to go around pick up sticks in the monastery. So that's my job. So I have to deal with a lot of people and different personalities. And sometimes, you know, things don't go the way I want them to go. So, in a sense, there's a bit of tension in my mind in dealing with these people. But the lovely thing is that living in a place like Bodhinyana Monastery, you have that freedom to have time out from everything. So you go back to your room, and for the rest of the day you're by yourself, and that's where you learn how to, you know, let go and forget about things, throw things away, and you just and then sooner or later you figure out that's the most wonderful thing that you can do for yourself. Do people here like to go on holidays? why?
You get away.
Yeah. You forget about your home for a couple of weeks. You forget about your kids. You forget about your jobs. And there's a sense of freedom there, right? And you can see that. It's when you're on holiday, you're just happy because there's something that's not there anymore. And you can see that happening with your mind as well. If you're, meditation is something that you need to give time for it to, develop, for you to actually understand what is actually going on in your own mind. It's something that you can learn from monks. We can teach it to you, but it's more of a, an observational thing. And we can sort of show you the map, but you have to be able to, use that map to see what your mind is really like, and the thing that you exercise, I think, is the ability to observe your own mind, and that's very important, because when you're sitting down and you're meditating for the first time and you don't have that, that skill of observing your own mind, your mind may be moving to the left and maybe moving to the right, but because your mind is in a fog, you don't see anything happening. The mind is sleepy, so you can't observe. And because that observation is not happening, you don't learn anything. And that's true in life. A lot of times when we want to learn something, we have to observe. Yeah? I used to be a chef. I was becoming a chef, right? And so I quit that because, who wants to be a chef? It's a lot of hard work. Living in a monastery is a lot easier. Instead of cooking for people cook for me. But you get taught all this stuff at, chefing school and stuff like that. But a lot of the times when you learn stuff in the kitchen, it's just through observation. So you're watching how the potatoes are cooking, you're checking the oven, you make sure it's not being overcooked, you make sure the potatoes are going crispy and brown. So you learn through observing how things are working in the kitchen, and you learn from that and you get better, you become a better cook, right? And in the same way, when you're looking at your mind, you're sort of, you're observing your mind, but with the framework of these teachings. So what are you looking for? So you're looking for things which make your mind peaceful. So you're looking for the cause of a peaceful mind. And you're looking for the effects of what a quiet mind does to you. Does a quiet mind make you a more calmer person? Does a quiet mind, build up that mental energy, that happiness in your own mind? Does a quiet mind, does it give you that clarity? So when you're, observing the world, you see things more clearer. You can be more in tune to what's around you. So you look at those things when you meditate, and then you observe, what does a mind which is thinking too much do to me? Have you ever heard of that phrase, like your mind is spinning out of control? Mm-hmm. And that's when the mind is thinking too much. And when you're meditating, you watch and you observe and you ask yourself, what is a restless mind helpful for me? Is this worrying about things helpful for me? And then you answer your own questions. How do you feel? And I think the way that you feel, that's an indicator of whether you're doing the right thing or not in the meditation practice. Are you feeling calm? If you're feeling peaceful, then you're on the right track. But if your mind is like in turmoil, if it's hating the meditation, then you must be doing something wrong. Yeah? So you know, it's a trial and error kind of thing. You have to give it time, you have to give it patience, and you know, the best teacher, I say, is just putting your butt on the meditation cushion and doing it yourself, you know, and then you get the benefits from it. And just always having that mind that observes and see what happens, and just using the framework of what has been taught here. And you know, a thing that Ajahn Brahm always talks about is to have kindness, a bit of care towards whatever's happening in the moment, is to develop that beautiful relationship with your mind, and that you know, that helps softens everything. And instead of like it's like getting upset and fed up with a mind which isn't peaceful, you can be kind and compassionate towards a mind which is restless, which is all over the place. And I think that's a beautiful attitude to take into the meditation practice, because once the storm passes, what you're left is with this quietness and with this peacefulness. And what happens is, if you have that kind attitude towards your mind, you can actually appreciate the stillness which arises in the mind. And I think when the mind has an attitude of complaining, fault finding, and when, you know, the storm passes within your own mind and peace arises because you have a mind which is fault finding, you can't appreciate the moment. You know? So it is very important to have that right attitude when you're meditating. And another thing which helps the mind get to a place of like calm and peace is to, you know, use a meditation object. And the popular one is, and a very simple one which doesn't really challenge people, is to watch your breath go in and out, and it's very simple. So just watch it go in and watch it go out. You don't need to control it, you don't need to find it, you just allow it to happen naturally. Because the more you get involved, the more disturbance that you can create. So try to be a person who is sitting in the back seat of the car and watching the breath, not the person who's sitting in the driver's seat taking control and watching the breath. There's a big difference there. You're taking away, you know, that thing that controls, that thing that directs. And the controller and the director of the mind is what causes the mind stress. So what we do instead is we take a step back and be more of a passive observer, and just to see how the breath is happening. You just watch it go in and you watch it go out. And what that does is it helps you, you know, anchor your mind on something. Because if you're thinking about the breath, you can't think about what you had for breakfast this morning. You know, if you're watching the breath, you can't think about what's going to happen tomorrow. So you can see the logic there. But you know, it's going to be difficult for the beginners because of our minds. In a sense, our minds have a mind of its own. And for the beginners, you probably find that when you direct your mind to the breath, you may watch it for maybe one or two or three breaths, but then the mind will just wander off. Has anybody experienced that? Hands up. Oh, everybody. actually, that it was my experience as well when I started meditating. And it got to the point where it was just too difficult to be mindful of my breathing. So then I thought to myself, oh, I'm not going to watch the breath. I was rebellious. So then I was like, oh, what object can I watch? And then I went through Ajahn Brahm's, you know, little booklet. And the first step to the meditation is the present moment awareness. And I thought, oh yeah, that's probably a lot easier to watch. So that's what I did, is I tried to bring my mind back to the present moment. And anything that's happening right now, whether it's like the sound in the room, or the sensations of your body, or this feeling of just being present. Do you know what I mean when you're just being present? Like in the here and now? Like just coming back to this moment? Like everybody knows where that place is, right? So sometimes, yeah, if the breath is too hard, just bring yourself back to that moment. And just stay there. And just come back again. Because that present moment is, you could say, the doorway into peace. Or, you know, the doorways into the joys of meditation. And it's lovely, you know, if you can just give it time, be patient, and then things will eventually happen. So just allow yourself to settle into the meditation. Just sit down and just passively observe or just know what is happening right now. It's that simple. And in a sense, if you can just be passive and just observe what's happening now, the mind does all the work for you. The mind will find peace. The mind will find inner happiness. All we need is just to have, not a bit, but a lot of patience. That's the magic word. A lot of patience.
So in a sense, just let your mind dictate what you're gonna do in this meditation. If the breath is already within your field of awareness, then just turn your mind to your breath. But if your mind is restless, then just allow the mind to be restless. Where the mind is sleepy, just allow the mind to be sleepy. Allow the mind to dictate what you're gonna observe. We're learning how to be passengers, not dictators. But as you're meditating, try to develop the mind of non-judging, no labeling, no commentary. Just being able to sit down passively and watch whatever's happening, coming from a peaceful sense of mind. So if you want to, you can just bring your mind into this moment. Just being right here, right now, it's a stepping stone to peace. A stepping stone to a free mind. Now you're giving yourself some time out from your world. Nothing, no responsibilities, nothing to think about. You can actually see the freedom of that. The freedom from thought is a great, you know, a great blessing, a great gift that you can give yourself. So now is the time to understand your mind as well. What mind state is happening right now? So you start to get to know what a peaceful mind is like, what a sleepy mind is like, what an angry mind is like. And you can ask yourself, is this useful? Is it beneficial for me? And if it's not beneficial for you, then try to let it go. Throw it away. if you want to, you can start watching the breath. And just be a passive observer. You're not there to control your breath, to make every breath the same. But instead, you just observe passively each individual breath. Sometimes the breath is short, sometimes the breath is long, sometimes the breath is heavy, sometimes the breath is light. It doesn't really matter the quality of the breath. The only thing that matters is that you are passively observing it. Now the mind, it's sort of like, I like to compare the mind to, you know, a battery, like a rechargeable battery. You know, you all have rechargeable batteries in your phone. You have to, if you want to get more power into your phone, you just plug it into the socket and then the phone works well. And sort of like meditation is like recharging the batteries of the mind. And sometimes we're thinking, we're just sitting here, just being in the present moment, just watching the breath. What is this going to do for us? You know? It's not, we're not really getting anything from it. But think of it in a way as how you would, you know, recharge a battery. If the battery's low, you know, the thing that you're trying to power doesn't really work so well. But when the battery is like fully charged, then you got so much you know, so much oomph behind it. And in the same way, this, what this meditation does is it helps you recharge the mind, the battery of the mind. So when you, you know, come out of your meditation, you feel refreshed. You feel revitalized, you feel regenerated, and from that newfound, you know, energy source, it's a lot easier to deal with the world. And that's, I think, a lot of people, that's what we're looking for. A way to deal with the world, to lessen the suffering that the world causes us. And that's the way to do it. So all you're doing when you're meditating is just sitting down, being peaceful, watching the object of your meditation. There's nothing more to it. There's only that. A very simple exercise to do. So you're just sitting down quietly, and just understanding that this is quite a calming thing to do. Just the very fact that you've got your eyes closed and your body is kept still, that in itself is something which can be very calming.
So how was that? Was that okay? Anybody got any questions? Bob?
Perhaps for the new people, the hindrances?
The five hindrances. What is the five hindrances?
Actually, I thought it was about 1,000.
Yeah, one of them is ill will. I have a very random mind, as you can see. One of them is ill will. The other one is ill will. Like anger, a strong dislike to something. And basically the five hindrances is it's a way the Buddha just put simply the blockages that stop our minds from becoming deep and becoming like peaceful and blissful and all those wonderful things that you hear about. You know, when you come here and you, oh, I get to see a monk. Oh, and he must be such a great meditator. So blissful, so peaceful, and so wise. But are we really? We're just repeating what the Buddha says. Well, anyways, so the five hindrances. So one of them is ill will. The other one is craving. Craving, yeah? Wanting. The other one is restlessness of the mind. So this all has to do with the mind. And then the other one is doubt in like one's own ability and in the teacher. And the other one is sloth and torpor. Yeah? So the Buddha basically said these are the five things which stop our minds from becoming peaceful. And if these five things are absent, then our minds will become peaceful. Yeah? And so basically, if you have a look at the five hindrances, it's connected to the way we live our lives. So when the hindrance of anger, you know, we can see in our daily lives how often we get angry. And if we get angry in our lives, then the anger usually translates into our meditation practice. And the Buddha taught us to restrain ourselves when it comes to these qualities of the mind. So one of the things that you can do before you're about to get angry at somebody, just tell yourself to stop. You know, there's no need to get angry now, and just try to restrain yourself. And then what you'll find is, I think over the weeks, over the years, that this anger will start to, you know, become smaller and smaller and smaller until it disappears. So this is one of the ways how we can lessen the ill will in our meditation practice. And sometimes that ill will manifests as the fault-finding mind when we meditate. Being in a society where we get taught to get whatever we want straight away. You know, if we want a cup of coffee, we'll just go down to the cafe and get a coffee. Or if we want something to satisfy us, we just go online, maybe on eBay, and buy something. So in our lives, we get what we want quite quickly. So when we're meditating, actually I lost what I was about to say. Completely forgot.
Ill will. Ill will. And we're finding fault with the mind. So that's one thing, you know, we start to find fault with whatever's happening within our own minds. And maybe, you know, the mind is getting sleepy. And that happens to all of us. We get sleepy and then we start to find fault. This is not meant to happen. You know, we get angry with our mind. Or our mind is getting restless. And then we start to get angry, you know, with our restlessness. And you can see this ill will, you know, this hate that we build up in our meditation blocks us from getting deeper. And what that also does is that it develops an unwholesome relationship, you know, with this mind, with this meditation practice. And we can see that in our lives when we have a dislike to, you know, say we have some dislike to, like, the weather. You know, some of us really hate the cold weather. So what do? We try to get away from it as much as possible. And in the same way, if you develop this ill will towards your meditation practice, then you'll just want to give it up and never come back to the practice anymore. And that's, in a sense, it's a sad thing that happens, because you don't give yourself that chance to develop peace. And so that's the, you know, the ill will, the hindrance of ill will, which blocks our mind from getting deeper. And you know, just a thought that popped into my mind is you know, the sometimes you hear about monks getting into these deep meditations where, you know, the mind is very blissful, very happy and very bright. And Ajahn Brahmali would say, Ajahn Brahmali, he's studied the Buddhist texts, and he's a very good scholar, and what he's learnt through the years is that if the five hindrances aren't there, then you're in deep meditation. Yeah. So you can see that sort of gives you an idea on how to look at your mind. And the other one is that sort of gets in the way is like the restless mind. And basically the restless mind is this mind which is, you know, thinking about something. Say you're at work and your manager just gives you a new project, and that's something that you can't get off your mind. So when you're sitting in meditation, it just turns over and over and over. Or you might, yeah, you know what I mean when I say that. And it's a feeling or an experience where this mind just won't shut up. It just keeps on going and going and going. And then you ask your mind to just be quiet, to just let go. But that doesn't happen. The mind is still ticking over. The mind is still thinking. And when that happens with the mind, we can't really do anything about it. It's sort of like, you could compare it to like a train building up speed, and it's got to a speed which is so fast that it's very, you can't really put the brakes on to stop it. But the way to go about it is to let the train slow down. And once it slows down enough, then you can put the brakes on. So when your mind is going through these restless episodes, what we can do is we can just step back and just allow the mind to just, you know, work itself out. Yeah? Sometimes we can't really do anything with our minds, and we just have to let it work itself out. That's why I said when we started this meditation, is you don't need a little patience, but you need a lot of patience. And I think if you can take that catchphrase with you away tonight, that will be very helpful
for your meditation practice. Because sometimes, you know, with these teachings, there's so much to learn out there. I mean, if you go to our library, we've got shelves and shelves and shelves of books on Buddhism. And sometimes when we're sitting down, we can't really remember what we've read or what we've listened to. And it's at times, you know, the simple teachings which help us out a lot. And just taking that into your meditation, just having that ability to be patient with whatever's going on is a great help of, you know, reducing the hindrances in your mind. And I'm trying to think of an example of being patient. And if you look at, you know, being in the opposite, impatience. Like being patient is having that ability to just sit down and wait. You can see that happening, you can see that happening when you're at a post office and you're waiting in line. Some of us can wait patiently. You know, we can just stand there and just like watch the world go by. And some of us are impatient. We want to get to that counter now. We want to get things done. In a sense, that does get things done. But when it comes to the meditation practice and what I've taught, what I was talking about moments ago, of this mind having a sense of being like having a mind of its own and being uncontrollable. And I'm sure if you've meditated for the first time or only for a couple of months, that's what you experience when you meditate. It's not peaceful, it's not quiet, but it's restless, it's thinking about something. And you know what I was saying before, having a lot of patience is to be able to just sit down and just watch what is happening. And that's the Buddhist way, to sit down and watch what is happening. And if you think about it, just being able to sit down in a quiet place, like no distractions, like say you have a room and you set it up for meditation, you don't have the TV on, what else, the radio, you know, the blinds are closed, you set it up nicely, you got the incense burning, you have a Buddha statue there, a nice meditation cushion to sit on, you've like created somewhat of a peaceful atmosphere, yeah? And when you're sitting down with nothing to do, when you've got your eyes closed, when you have your body still, just think about it. That's quite a calming and peaceful thing to do, right? Just like locking yourself up in a room, having no connection with the world. So in a sense, half of the work has been done. You're creating the causes for peace to happen. So when you sit down and you're trying to get this meditation going, for beginners, a lot of the times, you know, we come here, we want to learn the tricks and tips of how to quiet, make this mind quiet quickly. You know, sometimes you get taught, if you're angry, just have a lot of metta, you know, a lot of love. And that will solve the problem. But sometimes that doesn't work. The anger is still there. You know, you're still burning. You're still fuming inside. And then, you know, with cravings, you want this, you want that, and you go, oh, I've got to practice on clinging. I've got to be a simple person. But then the mind just keeps on thinking about the things it wants to buy in the shop or the deep meditation that it wants. So the mind is like all over the place. So what do? We just sit down and have that sense of a lot of patience, and just allow the mind to work itself through. And because of just sitting down, like in this peaceful posture with your eyes shut, I think that does something for the mind. And if you can, you know, wait patiently enough, the mind will start to become peaceful. You know, the hindrances will start to disappear by themselves. You know, Ajahn Chah, he gave, this is one of my favorite similes, and he talks about the mango orchard. You probably heard this before, but it's beautiful, and it teaches us so much about, you know, the way to meditate. And he said the Buddha 2500 years ago planted this mango orchard in this monastery. And what the mango orchard means is, like, you know, the fruit of enlightenment, the reason why we meditate, the reason why we become monks. And he said, all you have to do is go into that orchard and sit down, and the mango will fall by itself. And what did he mean by that? What did he mean? Sometimes, because of our, you know, habits, of our ways of doing things.
Be patient.
Yeah. What do we climb up that tree, and we try to reach for the mango, but because it's a Buddhist tree, the more you climb, the more the mango moves away. The Buddha was very tricky. So that's what it is to be impatient. So impatient, you could see, is like a cause for the five hindrances to arise. Because if you're impatient, you start to crave. Yeah? You crave for that peace. You crave for that inner happiness. And that craving, in a sense, pushes it away in terms of the way, you know, Ajahn Chah taught. So what did he do? Say, you just sit down under that tree patiently and wait.
And wait for it.
And then the mango, you just open up your hands and the mango will fall. Yes.
So when you say be patient, you mean like give it more time, or just not resisting what's happening, just allowing it to happen, and or both?
Both, yeah, both. Allowing it to happen, but at the same time, it's, you have to be very skillful with your mind, because what you're doing is you're developing a relationship with it. And that's what I always say, because if you start developing a bad relationship with your mind, what do you want? You just want to break up with your mind. But if you develop a good relationship with your mind, you want to stay with your mind. So yes, sometimes I say just sit down and don't resist anything, but then what could happen is the mind can just go on a tangent. Yeah, it'll go left, it'll go right, and in a sense, there's no sense of like focus happening. So we have to be very careful, and we have to like guide our mind, and just, you know, when it's ready, you can direct it more like into the present moment. You can direct it more onto the breath. And you know when to do that, when your mind starts to become more energized. You can actually, like I was saying in the meditation, you're recharging up your batteries when you're meditating. So as a beginner, you know, your batteries are quite low. But then over time, if you do correctly, the batteries will just get stronger and stronger and stronger. In a sense, that's, you have more like control over your mind, and you can direct it skillfully, and then, you know, just give it time, and then you develop more stillness, you watch the breath, and the mind just becomes a lot brighter. Yeah, like really bright, and you can, you know that you're going in the right direction. And it's beautiful. I mean, it's something that that you have to experience yourself, and I'm just trying to look for words to describe it. But you know, if you get there, you know, it's worth it. And you don't have to like get to the end of the path to experience the happiness that it can give you. It's the whole journey gives you a sense of happiness, a sense of like fulfillment. And the Buddha did say, you know, the teachings are like beautiful in the beginning, beautiful in the middle, and beautiful at the end. It's just how we use it. It's how we get the benefits from it, yeah.
So is this a benefit to your health as well?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Ajahn Brahm looks pretty healthy, and he eats crap. He looks pretty healthy. He's like 66 now. Yeah? Mm.
67.
He doesn't have any problems because he doesn't see the doctor. So he haven't had the blood test yet, so he doesn't really know what's going on. But he does look pretty healthy, and I think it does. It's good for your health because, you know, doctors have found that stress leads to like problems in the body, like heart attacks. Or you can feel if you're stressed out, parts of your body tense up and cramp up, and you're doing harm to your body. But if you're like meditating and being calm, you can actually, your mind is calm, so your body is calm. So when your body is calm, it sort of like heals itself, and it becomes like healthier and stronger. And I think a good indicator of a healthy body is how much, you know, energy you have throughout your whole day. Like, are you tired? You know, there's no energy. I just get up and I'm walking to the toilet and I'm really tired. All I want to do is go to sleep. And sort of that's an indicator of a body which isn't really healthy. But I think it does help. It's something maybe, you know, scientists haven't proved that, but it's something that you can feel within yourself. Yeah. Like, you can compare it to, like, you know, Tai Chi or like yoga or something like that. People who do it know it's really good for, you know, their mental health and their body as well. But there hasn't been real scientific evidence. But I could say, like, with the meditation, because you're learning how to be calm, and in the sense that the energies of the body, they can just flow freely and just, you know, heal the body, then yeah, I think it does work.
Healthy mind, healthy body.
Yeah, healthy mind, healthy body. That's, yeah, true. Yeah. And the doctors say a lot of times we get cancer is because of the mind. Mm. Yeah, strokes and heart attacks. It's not because of the fish and chips. So yes. Am I funny? I gotta like keep the standards of Ajahn Brahm. if you're not funny, you can't ordain there. He won't let you. No, I'm just joking. So anyways, I'll be spending the rains at the Cambodian temple. Have you heard about that one? 56 Scott Road. So if you want to feed a monk, you can go there.
Where's that?
Huh? 56 Scott Road. Kelsey. Yeah. It's actually a lovely tradition, actually. If you ever go to a monastery, like, people go there every day to feed the monks. Because even though I'm a great cook, I can't cook. That's a shame, isn't it? No, I'm not that good. I burn water. That's how bad I am. Yeah, so it's a lovely thing to see, this interaction between, you know, you people and the monks. It's not only like monks coming here and giving teachings, but it happens in the monastery. And what people do, because monks can't cook for themselves, we can't, we can feed ourselves, but we can't cook for ourselves, we can't store food. It's a very strict lifestyle. I don't know how I do it, but I do it. So we come close to ourselves, right? So we rely, you could say, heavily on the generosity of of you guys.
What if you don't come? What if you don't get food?
We starve. We go skinny and grumpy and unhappy. And then if that happens, we'll never come back here ever again.
What are we allowed to feed you?
Oh, we're not fussy anything. anything. Whatever you want. Yeah, you can do that. Ajahn Brahm would be very happy. So it's actually a very lovely thing to see. This interaction between people giving things to the monks, and then feeding the monks, and then monks, we receive the food, and we are grateful for the people that look after us, because. Basically, you guys give us the opportunity to do what we like to do, and that's to live a monastic life, in the forest, quietly, and just developing our minds in meditation. And we get all these teachings and stuff. Ajahn Brahm teaches every Wednesday. We have all these books in the library, but that's not the main thing. You can be like a great scholar, but that's not going to get you enlightened. What gets you enlightened, what is really beneficial for yourself, is to be able to meditate. And that's what you guys give us the opportunity to do that by looking after us. So basically our whole day is we are taught, doesn't mean we necessarily do it, but we are taught to go back to our rooms and to meditate. And to deepen our meditation, to actually see what the Buddha saw, and realize what he realized, and you have all these enlightenment, understanding life for what it really is, seeing suffering, the nature of the self, and all that kind of mind bending ideas. And that's it's because of you guys we get the opportunity. And very grateful. Very grateful for what you guys give us. And in return, it's like this give and take. In return, the monks come here to teach you guys, to help you along the way, to basically, add more, give you more tools to, to create more happiness in your life. And like I said, it's a very important point. When you meditate and you develop that mental energy, that inner happiness within, you can deal with life with a sense of ease. Yeah? Because your mind is happier. It can absorb more. It's like more of a sponge. So whatever hits it, it just absorbs it. It's not like something hard where something hits it and it just bounces off, or it's hard like glass. Your mind, sometimes your mind is not like it's low in energy, it's dull, it easily becomes grumpy, it becomes like glass, so whatever hits it, it just cracks, it messes up. But you have a mind, you learn how to meditate, the mind becomes more energized, and it becomes like a sponge. You can absorb so much more the pressures of life, and just deal with it basically with a sense of ease. Yeah, it's like the suffering, just like the hard times and the difficulties, they don't disappear like straight away, but they become less and less and less, more tolerable, more manageable. Yeah. And that's when you're like moving in the right direction. It's like the Dalai Lama says, I don't have no magic pill to give you, and then you take it, then everything goes away. It doesn't work that way. It's more of a gradual path. Yeah, steady path. And that's the beautiful thing about it.
because you can just relax, you know. Oh, it's a steady path. Oh, it's automatic. I'll just sit back and relax. And it'll just happen. And that's the approach I take. And it seems to work. So yeah, there's no need to be hard on yourself, you know. Just day by day, put in the work, and then you get the benefits from it. Yeah. And that's the one thing that I love about the way Ajahn Brahm sort of like approaches his teachings, is he understands that it's more of like a natural, organic, more of a automatic process, and there's no need to be, you know, too hard on yourself, no need to force yourself, but you can just, you know, take like the middle way, like, and just cruise along, and then it will happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay if nobody else puts you under pressure.
No.
Because other people can put you under pressure.
Well, what do you mean?
With meditation.
No, not with meditation. In your daily life.
Yeah.
You can take it easy and relax and meditate. But other people could put you under pressure. Then you've got to overcome
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I think, yeah. Like, like I was trying to allude to that earlier.
Mm.
People put you under pressure. But you don't have to, like, you don't... I don't know if you live with them, maybe it's somebody at work, and and you only see them for a couple of hours, you know, you don't need to get into a fight with them or anything like that, but as soon as you close the doors to work, you're on your way home, just forget about it. Don't allow them to take away your happiness.
Mm.
Yeah, that's one of Ajahn Brahm's sayings.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Don't allow people to take away your happiness. And this is what I... Like, I tell the Anagarikas that sometimes when they come into the monastery, these are the guys in white, and they want to become monks. And I tell them that sometimes you have to develop a, you know, a thick skin, and just try to forget about it, and not worry. Yeah. And you can and you understand that that's better for your mind. I mean, if you carry it home, does it really solve anything?
Mm.
It doesn't. You're just allowing it to churn over into your head, and a lot of people just think about it, but they don't do anything about it. I think that's the nature of life. So if you're not going to do anything about it, there's no point thinking about it. So just forget about it. Yeah. And then life still goes on, you know. It's, yeah. Maybe you shouldn't relax too much. I shouldn't say that, I'm getting in trouble. You got the middle way. The Buddha said the middle way. Not too relaxed, not too strict. The middle way. Whatever that means. Yeah. So you just got to find out for yourself. But it's, yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, happens.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you, Major.
No worries.
Thank you. Can I just push that button?